So you guys remember the instructions from the first show? Lots of enthusiasm. Lots of, I want you to piss yourselves. At some point. Here we go.
Roughly 24 to 92 hours ago, Stab's team of comedy scientists commissioned four specific humorists to give various potentially comedic takes on several random topics, which they'll now perform for the first and likely last time in front of a live studio audience in a show called
Stab. Welcome! Oh my God! Welcome to Stab! Welcome! Are you guys ready to meet your contestants for this show we call Stab? Very good. Please welcome to the stage Edgar Granados in seat number one. Up second, right in the middle, Sacramento zone, Nick Bruner. And last, but not completely least, Jesse Jones on another show again. Welcome, everyone, to Stab. Edgar, how are you? You got that all managed over there?
I am managing it like a manager at Home Depot.
I am so glad that you're here. Edgar was out in the alley skateboarding before the show.
Skating.
he was kicking around.
Kicking and flipping, you know.
Really sweaty. Gave me a handshake that I had to wipe down. But it's only because he's from Venezuela, and I don't...
Yeah, I'm used to a more humid climate.
That's right. So
this dry air really sweats me out, you know.
So, Edgar, this is, I believe, one of your fifth to eighth appearance on the show.
Yeah, I was checking my Google Drive.
Thank you for...
It's like, this is a lot.
Thank you. I feel like you're just a plumber right now. I don't know why you're fixing... Edgar Granados, I don't know if you knew this, has a heart of a champion.
Yeah.
In a jar. We're moving on to Nick Bruner. Nick Bruner, let's hear it for Nick Bruner.
Hi, John Ross. I'm so glad to be a specific humorist on your show today.
Thank you very much. I don't know if we're allowed to say what you do. Should we not affiliate it with...
Capital Public Radio.
Capital Public Radio is Nick Bruner.
Legitimacy.
The reason I ask is because I know some of the prompts we gave you tonight may put your job in danger. So...
Well, I don't actually have any kind of journalistic credibility in my job on its own.
That's
so
true.
I'm just the monkey who plays music once in a while. So no one knows who I am. It's fine. This is cool. I'll say hateful, terrible things.
Very good. Very good. Right. Nick Bruner representing all of NPR and other affiliates.
Hello. We're having a fun drive tonight at Luna's.
Nick Bruner, I don't know if you guys knew this. Nick Bruner's getting married soon.
Am I?
Not really.
Wait.
He's not really. Sorry.
He's going to be the best. I love him or her so much.
Very good. And down at the end, we have Jesse Jones here again.
Hey.
He showed up again. Jesse Jones has put many hours. This will be our 40-something episode. And you've been on every single one except two.
Just about, yeah.
Because of that. We already talked about your dead grandpa. You missed it that one time.
Yeah. Make sure to mention it every month.
I want to bring it up. Yeah. No problem.
It never stops hurting. Thank you.
It's good. He's in good company with my dead heroin addict mother, so we're...
I would hope they're not in the same company. I would hope my grandpa did better than that.
Hey, man. All dogs go to heaven. It's fine.
All of them?
That's a Bill.
All of them?
Sure. I'm not going to continue. That's someone else's joke. Jesse Jones, don't know if you knew this, he's responsible for climate change. So
you're welcome.
Thank you. I don't
for
know
warmer
which end,
summers.
I don't know which end of climate change you're responsible. I think you're responsible for changing it back.
I'll take credit in either direction.
All right, great. Let's play Stab. Oh. Stab. That's my voice. All right. That was awesome. This first segment is called This Was Today Once. Basically, it's a bunch of stuff that happened on this date, and we push them together and ask you how you celebrated both of them together. Granados, I'm going to call you Edward at some point, even though your name's Edgar. I'm socially insensitive. On this date, 1939, Princess Irene of the Netherlands was born. Princess Irene, you know her. You know what else happened on this very date? In 1981, President Ronald Reagan fires 11,359 striking air traffic controllers who ignored his order to return to work. How about that?
The thing about that, John.
Yep.
This is my fifth time on the show. I forgot we're supposed to write about celebrating the days.
You are so high right now, so that's...
I was high when I wrote it,
you're
John.
Right, yeah.
That explains why I forgot. So I wrote, I just wrote jokes about these.
You just forgot. Not even anything specific.
I know.
I just forgot, John. Everything.
I didn't know what to write. I was like, what the fuck? These are just two things. Where do I go with this? So this is where I went. Just wrote some jokes. Princess Irene of the Netherlands, a.k.a. Princess of Orange Nassau, a.k.a. Princess of Liebbasterfil, a.k.a. Duchess of Parma, was first in the public eye after her family fled to Canada from the Nazi invasion. I mean, what a whirlwind life she was leading at 2 years old. Talk about highs and lows. It's like 1 second you're born a princess, then knock, knock, it's the Nazis.
I don't think they knocked.
The Germans are very polite.
I see the lights on. Go.
Okay, I'll keep going. Sorry.
Unpause.
Keeping up with this bad girl reputation, she drove a sports car and converted from Protestantism to Catholicism to marry the Duke of Parma, Carlos Hugo, which is ironic because they got divorced anyways. It's a little religion in here. She had 4 kids, published a book called Dialogue with Nature, where she wrote about conversations she had with trees and dolphins. And, I don't know what else you want me to do with this, John, is what I, that's what I wrote down.
You did well.
I wrote those words.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no, okay, oh, yeah, just that one, or both of them?
Both of them?
Yeah.
Why not do both of them?
Sounded like we were moving on, so.
Sounded like you were done.
with the first one.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
All right.
On to
you
the
did
next
not mash
one.
Them up. I understand. It was segregated.
I very much forgot this entire thing.
No worries.
Yeah, okay. So Reagan fires 11,359 striking air traffic controllers.
Correct.
Who ignored his order to cease their strike. Wow, you hadn't seen that many working-class Americans get screwed over like that since probably the last thing Reagan did right before that thing. I mean, under Reagan, people thought the American dream was never having to work again, but not like this. And... This is actually really ironic because during the strike that Reagan wouldn't support, John Hinckley Jr.'s flight got delayed, so during the wait, he went to watch Taxi Driver. So very I bit good. Him in the butt.
Very good.
Thank you.
Edgar Granados is drinking a smoothie.
Smooth.
Bruner, comma, Nick. On this day... D-A-Y-E, that's how I spelled it on accident. 1861, the United States Army abolishes flogging. Also on this very date, 1866, Harry Trott, Australian cricketer, was born. How did you celebrate these events today?
Well, sir, I'll tell you. Like all public radio employees, until my head is removed via sword fight, I am immortal. I have inside me blood of kings. And in 1861, and 1866, I celebrated the exact same way by flogging Australian cricketer Harry Trott. How did I do that 5 years before his birth? The answers to such questions are inconsequential. Cricket is a ridiculous game. Its players deserve to be scourged with lashes and rods and cat-o'-nine-tails. And my position in the army was not subject to its own conventions because I was Black Ops, 19th century style. Hit a baseball, you criminal Aussie rube! I shouted at him just before just wailing on that kid with just the biggest thing I could find, a board with a nail in it.
Wow.
He came at me with the closest object that he had at hand, which was a cricket bat. It was the first step on his road to stardom as a professional athlete, and so I was done in by my own time paradox of my own creation. So don't mess with the natural order of things. Cricket sucks.
Very good. Nick Bruner. I actually forgot to tell. This is Nick Bruner's first time on the show, so thank you for being here.
Oh, Nick. Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here. I love Lunas.
I mean, he was asked a lot, but, you know, he turned us down. He was a
busy. I don't much care for you.
That's not true.
Who does?
It's possible. Jesse Jones.
Yeah.
Going to clear my throat.
Sure.
On this date, 1982, Lolo Jones, American hurdler, was born. Guess what else?
Oh, wow.
Also on this date, 1305, William Wallace. Come on, everyone, shed a tear. William Wallace, who led the Scottish resistance against England, is captured by the English, Longshanks, near Glasgow, and transported to London, where he was put to trial and executed. Mm-hmm. Holy shit about these things. Eh?
Yeah. Well, naturally, when thinking about William Wallace, it's impossible for me not to think of Mel Gibson's portrayal in 1995's Braveheart. And when thinking about Mel Gibson, it's impossible for me to not think of his drunken 2006 traffic stop tirade, in which he famously proclaimed that the Jews were responsible for all the wars in the world. By the way, you're not a Jew, are you, John?
I actually am a Russian Jew.
Is that Orthodox?
I don't know.
I'm going to let that slide. So when taking the birthday of hurdler Lolo Jones and Mel Gibson's career ruination together, I naturally set out to clear the bar set by Mr. Gibson in terms of career suicide. So it was with that in goal in mind that I sat down this afternoon to come up with a list of inflammatory claims, which I will now lay against a selection of racial and ethnic groups in the hopes of having them used against me someday to ruin my career I might ever put together.
Yet again.
They are as follows, in no particular order of severity. Mexicans are gentle, attentive lovers.
It's true.
The gays are responsible for all of the cotton candy in the world. Black people make rainbows and release them into the sky after storms. Every time an Asian is born, a kitten is too. And women make me sick. Because I'm allergic to awesome. I'm sorry if this has detrimentally affected the way you will now forever see me. But I hope maybe someday you'll be able to accept these truths into your heart as I have. Thank you.
Very good. This was... That was Today Once. This show is still called STAB. This next segment is called Reorganization. Please take this existing acronym, reimagine it. What does it now stand for? Who or what does it now represent? In honor of Nick Bruner here, today's acronym is WKRP. WKRP. We're going to start with Edgar Granados. What does WKRP now stand for, if you could remember?
I actually do remember, and it's actually rather interesting. WKRP stands for the Water Night River People. It's sort of shorthand for the Water Night River People Alliance. From Lord Alfred Tennyson's mythical realm created to house the legend of King Arthur. See, it was in the year 487 that the Water Knights, realizing that they were thirsty from battle all the time, didn't see it proper that royal decree forced them to haggle yerbuck, which is a dried root that can be woven into these heavy metal baskets that really kick ass. They were forced to haggle this route with the keepers of the stream, a.k.a. the river people. So these knights, they got together and made a rogue sect of knights, now called the Roadrunner Seven, because of how they used to sort of run on the road beside stagecoaches and rob them of their yerbuck, which they did not trade with the river people. Nor barter, nor share. In fact, they amassed in this sort of large amassing all the yerbuck in the realm over the course of 87 jours, which is the French word for days.
De jour.
Now, King Arthur gets involved because the river people are fucking pissed. They're heated, they're so mad at those water knights because they can't make the heavy metal baskets necessary to house their amps for their rock shows. They can't rock anymore is what I'm saying, John. They need the baskets or the yerbuck to make the baskets so they can rock and have a place to store their amp afterward. So King Arthur gets involved. And all the knights by now have gotten together with the Roadrunner Seven to show solidarity, like we're in this together,
right?
Because the punishment for theft as a knight wasn't really all that severe, but for knights to not show solidarity, like present this veneer or lifestyle of camaraderie or fraternitas. it just wasn't spoken of. So the river people, King Arthur and the river people.
I feel like I'm at a Renaissance fair right now for some reason. Like this is read from a decree. Go ahead. Continue. Sorry.
Scribed from parchment. Google Drive now does parchment. So the river people, King Arthur and the river people, which was the name that the Water Knights had taken right prior the meeting before the meeting, they changed their names. It's like a sign that they were as much people of the river as the river people. So they should get free water, which, as you know, is what started this whole kerfuffle in the first place. So to end the kerfuffle, King Arthur's like, okay, here's a row or a stack of cards, a vertical row, which is like a column of cards. Pick a card. Show the card to the audience. Don't let me see it. I'm going to divine the card. Okay, one of two cards I'll divine.
What is happening?
And I'll say it out loud, and whoever has the card gets to keep the water supply. But then they also have to be in charge of the drawbridge out in the forest of trolls. Right? Nobody wants that job.
Nobody. Okay. Who would?
The trolls are very sexual. Very sexual creatures. So the whole place is littered.
Sexual.
Sexual.
Okay.
Sexual healing. They practice it. The whole place is just littered with troll fucking. Of every sort in stature, tall, blonde, affixed. Trolls are fucking in them woods, like, all the time. It was actually very clever what King Arthur did there. This is the last part.
Okay.
So,
of the first volume.
In the saga.
Book one of five.
I'll be back next week. So both parties, they're holding their cards, right? Like, no, we don't want that, we don't want that. King Arthur says, fine, water people, do you think you could, like, just share the water supply? And any Yurbok, water knights, any Yurbok that you guys find on your adventures, share it with the water people, the river people. And they're like, yeah, that sounds fine, we can live with that.
Three people just left.
So that's the alliance. And the crazy thing is, the Water Knights like the River People's rock concerts. They would always like go and like show support and show mad love. They were just like way mad thirsty, hella much more than they liked the rock concerts.
How funny would it be if this was blank? Like you just M&M'd that whole thing.
That's as far as they know.
Edgar, you're gonna make a good father because you fucking dedicate to the story. Very good, Edgar Granados. Nick Bruner.
I don't know if I can follow Edgar's crazy
anthology,
J.R.R. Tolkien. Final Fantasy scenario that he threw out there, but I'll give it my best. Actually, it reminds me, there was one time that I was had occasion during a fun drive. Do you guys listen to public radio? You know what public radio is? Okay. So, you know, we beg for money like three times a year. Like, yeah. Can't do it without you. Ira Glass will kill him if you don't give us money or whatever. And so we were having a fun drive, and Osama bin Laden, it's announced that he's killed.
Yes.
And it's news to us. We didn't know what was going on. We were happy. Like, we're on the air begging for money. It's live. And the news comes in, and then NPR is like, more about that when we come back. And it cuts to us, and we're supposed to be asking for money. And I turn on the microphone, and I was like, more on the Osama bin Laden kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle. Two kerfuffles, the name of this episode.
I actually said kerfuffle.
Did you?
Media people suck. We don't know what we're doing. Just remember that every time you turn one on.
Hey, at the end of this show, if you want, I would like you to share your story about Peter Sagal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that at the end.
Okay.
So WKRP, what does that mean to you?
WKRP. Okay, so WKRP to me, now it stands for White Cranky Republican People. Cranky with a K.
Right.
Because they're sassy. And that now stands for, frankly, on Thursday, we're going to find out, because that's when the Fox News Republican candidate debate is going to show us exactly what those people are all about. Also featuring Dr. Ben Carson, noted black man, Dr. Ben Carson, who's excluded from the WKRPs. Further, actually, I have another one. WKRP can also stand for White Cranky Republican Pedestrians. I can set that scene up for you. So you've got you got a crosswalk, right? You got a crosswalk, and you got a car that just burns right through a red light, and someone walking across, this WKRP almost gets hit by the car, and they go, Jesus Christ! Because they like Jesus a lot. they're like super into God. I don't know if you guys know or not. Anyway, that's WKRP.
Very good. A car made of liberal agenda. All right. Jesse Jones, wrap this one up quickly. I'd like to move on. WKRP. What is WKRP? No offense, it's just longevity. WKRP, let's...
Well, between seemingly endless reports of American cops murdering unarmed civilians and the terrible news of bored orthodontists hunting beloved jungle cats... It seems our news feed is being constantly bombarded by the horrors of despicable homicide reports. And that's where my WKRP comes in. The Whimsical Killings Report Project. See, the Whimsical Killings Report Project knows that senseless murder is a fact of life and it's not going away. But rather than focus on the grisly senselessness of it all, we like to highlight the creativity. Downright whimsical stories of atrocity out there that you might otherwise have missed. Like the story of Elmer Raymond Chaffee, who in the winter of 1966 would lure wandering homeless people into his apartment with the promise of bowls of hot soup.
Mm.
He would then overstuff them with his delicious tomato bisque until they literally drowned on his broth. Then Elmer would carefully remove their intestines, tie them up to look like meaty, soup-filled balloon animals, and leave them on the doorsteps of local school teachers. Or the Snow White Genocide, as it's come to be known in Tunisia, Africa. There, every week since the initial theatrical release of Disney's Snow White in 1937, Tunisian warlords have randomly chosen 7 villagers, pulling them from the arms of their families, begging for rescue from a god that will only sit and watch. Then they hack off their legs below the knee, dress them up in tall floppy hats, and march them to the Dahar Mountains on their still bleeding stumps.
Oh my god.
Their path to the caves is lined by their friends and family, who are forced at gunpoint to whistle the tune of "Hi ho, hi ho, it's off to work we go." Those believed to not be giving their all are shot dead and tied to one of the 7 dwarves to be dragged the rest of the way. After reaching the Dahar Mountains, the sacrifices are herded into a shallow cave, the entrance of which is blown up by a single hand grenade painted to look like the evil queen's poison apple, burying the villagers alive. That's 7 people, once a week, for 78 years, or 28,392 innocent kooky murders. That's WKRP. Like us on Facebook today and never miss a story of whimsical tragedy.
Very good. That was the longest reorganization we've ever had. This next segment hopefully won't be filled with as much subtext. The name of this next segment is called The Top 5 Google Searches Of. This is the top 5 Google searches of a Planned Parenthood fetus. Boy, it's getting dark. If a Planned Parenthood fetus could search Google, what would its top 5 searches be? Everyone relax. We're going to do one at a time and cycle through 15 Google searches. A quinceañera of Google searches of Planned Parenthood. Let's go ahead and start with Edgar Granados with his first Google search from the fetuses of Planned Parenthood.
Craigslist surrogate ads. Hoax?
Nick Brunner.
Google from the womb, comma, how to.
Well, see, not to slow things down, but I further extrapolated this abstract concept to mean these were searches from Planned Parenthood as a fetus, a Planned Parenthood fetus.
Okay, a baby planned, baby.
So, because this wasn't complicated enough a task already. So these are the top 5 Google searches of essentially an unborn Planned Parenthood.
Okay, wonderful.
So my first one, am I alive yet?
Okay. Very good. Now Edgar's going to go, and you all have to reset the premise for 2 people.
And just remember. Just remember when it comes back around.
Okay. Edgar Granados, you're 2nd of 5.
So I'm just a sad little fetus, a regular fetus, not a Planned Parenthood fetus. Jacuzzi World Return Policy. It's like the baby ordered a jacuzzi.
Nick Brunner.
Coping with eviction.
Jesse.
How can I tell if I might be the next Hitler?
Offensive. 3. Edgar.
Drake, Spotify playlist.
Countries that treat women's health with dignity, comma, Expedia.com.
Third is, if you were defined by something you did only 3% of the time, how many people would be known as booger-eating litter bug public urinators?
Okay.
Odd emphasis on urinators.
Urinators, yeah. Urinators.
I don't know why that came out like that.
Would you call me? Urinator. Ralph Nader. You never had a chance.
It's Urinator's, yeah. Ralph Nader's grandson. Yeah. Urinator. All right. Edgar Granados, please do the fourth, fifth, five.
Southwest flights to Texas.
Okay. I see.
Squatters' rights. What are?
Very good.
What percentage of elderly white men have ever had to decide what to do after they were raped by their fathers?
All right. Family show.
I'm, yeah.
Bring us home with the fifth of five. Oh. Edgar.
Fifth of five?
Yes.
How to learn French fast.
Right.
Statistically, she's more likely to be here for contraception than abortion, which means fewer siblings, thus more time and love for you, comma, how to shorten Google searches.
Maybe last Bitly could get in on that, yeah. I think.
Last one ties in very closely. If no one else is going to offer free STD testings and treatment, free contraceptives and free cancer screenings or other women's health services, would it be okay if I did? As long as I got to kill a baby every once in a while.
That was the top five Google searches. Of a Planned Parenthood smoothie fetus. The show is still called Stab. Used to be called Fire. For some reason. This next segment's called Location, 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 a fan favorite. Location, Location, you all run businesses in a shitty location. Please make us want to come to them. Edgar Granados, you are the owner of a vape lounge in an elementary school cafeteria.
Hi. Hey. Hi, my name is Harold L. Vaperman, and I'm a premium, established, legitimate figure in the totally credible vape marketplace. I just couldn't afford my own building and also couldn't afford to quit my day job as a cafeteria person. That's right, I have a vape shop in a cafeteria due to denied bank loans at every major bank and credit union. If they do loans, I don't know, maybe that's why they denied me. So come on down, come on down to Harold L. Vaperman's House of Vape, conveniently located inside the Glen Edwards Middle School cafeteria. Yes, come to me here in the cafeteria. We have tons of specials. Do you need e-juice, vegetable glycerin? We got it. Tater tots, we got it. Please don't tell the principal. High quality vapes, models of the highest quality in this cafeteria. Pizza, we have it. Because again, my vape lounge, Harold L. Vape Vaperman's House of Vape, is inside of a middle school cafeteria. Glen Edwards Middle School cafeteria. Hang out in the janitor's closet. You cannot vape near the children. This is highly illegal what I'm doing. I don't even know why I'm making a commercial for it, except that I bought the stuff, the vape, and now I have to sell it or I'll lose my house. These prices are literally as low as I can make them so that I don't lose my house. Come buy me out. There is a sale now that I just started, and it's crazy. Our prices are crazy. Crazier than opening a vape lounge inside of a middle school, Glen Edwards Middle School in Lincoln, California. Come on down. Harold L. Vaperman.
Edgar Granados. So good. That was great. Very good, Edgar. Oh, Nick Bruner. Capital Plug Radio's Nick Bruner.
Hello.
You run a fishnet stocking store in Amish country.
Yeah.
Hello, friend. Honest Abraham Yoder here, founder of Loaves and Fishnets. Yes, just like our forefathers, for over 70 years, we believe in holding on to the old ways. English and brethren alike make peace with our reasonably priced, traditionally crafted stockings. For as the old hymn says, entice your loved one to get close to you and to God on high, to be fruitful and to multiply. You shall do exactly that when ye hearken to our annual rum spring a sale. For when you buy one pair of Loaves and Fishnet stockings, get a pack of cigarettes and a thumb drive of 2½ Men, season 1. Buy 2 more and receive 28 pairs half off to share amongst your many siblings. Know and be fearful of high-cost stockings, for the Lord is loving and terrible at once. But at our fine shop, you'll find fellowship and sexy refuge from his awesome wrath. Remember, there is not another sister, friend, or brother loves the way that Jesus can. Lest ye find the right way off the I-30 highway to the finest stockings in the land. Loaves and Fishnets.
Very good. You're from Illinois, so I feel like this might be a business.
Saw a lot of buggies growing up.
Out in Bushnell. All right, Jesse Jones. Very good, Nick Bruner. Very good. That was great.
Thank you.
Jesse Jones, you operate a potato peeler outlet during the Great Potato Famine of 1854.
Potato.
Potato.
Sure, things look bad. But look on the bright side. You'll be dead soon. Me? I've got a warehouse full of fucking tools built specifically to be used on a food we ain't got none of anymore. More than that, though, these are fucking overstock and discontinued models of pointless fucking tools. They weren't even a person's first choice of peelers. I've got an outlet store for obsolete reminders of how we're all going to fucking starve to death. I moved from Scotland to Ireland for this shite. What the fuck am I going to do with these? Peel carrots? Apples? Aren't you fucking listening? These are potato peelers, not fucking vegetable peelers. These fucking things are useless. At this point, all these fucking things are good for is stabbing your neighbors with and stealing what little bit of food they've got squirreled away. And if they've got potatoes, well, they damn well deserve to be stabbed to death anyway for hoarding them. And now you can peel the fuckers, too. I'd call that a lose-win-win. So come on down to Ewan's Tater Scrapers and arm yourself to the fucking teeth. Because if you don't, you can be damn sure your neighbors are. Stab or be stabbed. And you wins.
Oh, my God. I think that could have been the best location we've ever had. That was wonderful. Yes. Yes. Thank you, one guy named Ben Rice. You can look at Ben Rice on our Stab page as well on YouTube, where he does a poem on the proper ways to spank a child.
To whip a child.
To whip a child.
Yeah.
Whip it. It is great. this brings us, sorry, you guys are going to groan right now, to our last category of the evening. See, I told you. Movie makeup. Here we go again. Here are movie titles we made up. Please give a synopsis based off the provided titles. Edgar Granados, you were given the movie title, The Bartender Pompadour Pact. Nick Bruner, you were given Anyone But Mommy. Jesse Jones, you were given El Diablo, Tiene Un Palo Pola. The Devil Has a Dick Stick.
We're going to start with Edgar Granados and the Bartender Pompadour Pact. Make us want to come see this movie.
Yeah, halfway through, I realized I was thinking of Matador instead of a Pompadour. Quickly rectified the situation. I think we got a good flick here. Excited to tell you about it. It was in Delawos. We had little choice in the matter, us being the men that we were. In the wintertime, I remember we were young and hopeful. In these harsh days of prison present, we stay bonded as a cocoon to a branch, an eel to the salty skin of a leopard shark. The Bartender Pompadour Pact has captured the hearts and minds of Spanish from Spain audiences for decades. Now coming to a theater near you from the mind of Guy Ritchie, director of Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, which were pretty much the same movies, we can all agree. So it's like a bartender, the best bartender in the world, famous for his super secret recipe, Cocktail Especial, has more than a secret up his sleeve. And there is a matador with hair that just don't care. It's hair that could not have another care. It waves like it's got nothing to worry about. Also the best matador in the world. His nombre, El Pompadour que mata. But there's more to the story than meets the eye. These guys are bad guys with a plan, a pact. To be bad guys for money. One sword. A broken bottle with salt on the rim. And he walks around with a belt of salt and bottles to be broken for fights. The bartender does. And the matador, Pompadour, the matador has a sword that's killed 1,000 bulls. And they fight for money around the world. And the plot line is... that someone is on to let their secret out, to oust them and their secret. It's a journalist undercover for President Ronald Reagan is in this too for one scene, and they chase each other around the world having fights. Reagan's journalist against the Pompadour Pact with the Bartender is the movie.
Edgar Granados, a very strong showing. Thank you for being here, Edgar. We're going to move on to Nick Bruner, finishing it up. The name of the movie that you were given was Anyone But Mommy.
Okay, you guys. So, all right. From the minds of the people who brought you the movies Van Wilder and the American Pie series comes another wacky teen sex romp called Anyone But Mommy. Okay, right. So here's what's going to happen, right? Okay, so there's this kid. His name is Little Eddie Rex, right? And he is the last one of his friends to get laid. And all of his friends are like, Ed, man, you just gotta go out. You just gotta get it, man. And he's just like all these like wacky. He's like trying to like. So there's a dog involved, and then like all these wacky things that like these farcical, you know, doors shutting that shouldn't be shut. Just misadventures. All these things happening in crazy ways, right? And there's like fart jokes or whatever, and then all of a sudden, you know, like he goes to a fortune teller at the fair because it's a big deal, and the fortune teller's like, hey, be careful, don't just like, you know, do it with whoever. And Eddie's like, you know what, get you, fortune teller. And he just goes out and he gets a little drunk because, you know, again, teen sex romp. He's like 16, he's never had beer before, and he drinks like 2 and he goes crazy, and he's like, you know what, everyone's looking pretty good right now, all my friends be like, I gotta go get laid, so I'm gonna, that's like forefront of my mind, right? And so I'm just gonna, who's that? Come here. And then they have awkward sex. And it's his mom. It's a fable. It's Oedipus Rex. It's Anyone But Mommy.
Very good. Nick Bruner. Nick Bruner.
Can I make a quick admission, John?
Yes, you may.
I just made that up. I didn't know that.
You don't say.
I didn't see that on the list. I was terrified.
Oh, my God.
Until, like, right now. So...
Really, it wasn't on the list, was
so,
it?
So brownie points or whatever, right?
Yeah, very good. Yeah,
that?
Very
okay,
good.
Cool.
I noticed you weren't reading it. I'm like, this guy is a pro.
Terrible.
This guy committed. That's right. That's right. Improvisation. Very good. Improvisation. That's how you pronounce that.
Jesse Jones, bring us home. The name of your movie is called El Diablo Tiene Un Palo Pola. The Mexican guy gets it. He's half black, half white. Dorian Foster, ladies and gentlemen. He looks Mexican.
we should just, so no one's confused, we should go around and tell all the races of everyone.
We should.
Just to clarify.
I am the pure white. I mean, I'm purely white. Not okay. All right, let's go.
It's the weirdest romper room I've ever been a part of.
Are you going to say it's a rumpus room?
Romper room.
Is that a thing?
It used to be a long time ago.
That's back good. Well, I can't wait to finish this show. I can't wait. El Diablo tiene un palo pola. The devil has a dick stick. Jesse Jones. That was so fun to type into Google Translate, by the way. Oh, Christ. Well, Jesse Jones.
Yeah, I apologize to Edgar specifically for the accent.
Apology accepted.
Or you can tell me it was awesome. We'll see. Probably not.
We'll see.
El Diablo tiene un palo polla. Is actually a beloved Spanish folk tale told by grandmothers for generations. It tells the tale of what happens to bad little children who act up and don't be good. The story goes that there once was a little boy named Manuel. Manuel liked to cause trouble, pushing over carts of beans, making ugly faces at all the goats of the village. One day, an old woman stopped little Manuel and told him that if he kept acting this way, that El Diablo would find him and bop his hands with his palo. Manuel did not believe the old woman. He told her that she smelled like old river water and hit her bosom with an ear of corn. Manuel ran away laughing, pleased with his words and his action. He spent the rest of the day picking fights with chickens and telling lies to the barns. Manuel was very happy with his mean-spirited behavior. When just then a puff of red smoke shot up from the ground and El Diablo appeared before little Manuel. El Diablo laughed and menaced the little boy. You like to tell lies to buildings? And hit old women with corn, do you, boy? Manuel smiled and nodded his head. I do, you big red onion! You're a bad little boy indeed, El Diablo said, waving his palo above his head. I'm not afraid of you, El Diablo. I will throw corn at you. Manuel waved his fist at El Diablo. And as he did, El Diablo bopped Manuel's hands with his palo and smiled. Will you now? And how is it that you will throw the corn at me with your hand in such a state? In a poof, Manuel's fingers were magically transformed into flaccid penises. Little Manuel screamed and cried, you bully! You turned my fingers into penises! But I have more than one hand to throw corn! But as he tried, El Diablo bopped that hand as well, turning those fingers too into dangly useless penises. And so Manuel ran away. And when he grew up, everyone pitied the man with the tiny, soft dick fingers. And he was never happy. And so the moral of the story is, of course, sea un gallo, obtenerlos, denos de gallos,
or be a cock, have cock fingers. It's a weird folk tale.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Stab. Thank you guys for coming out. We really appreciate it. One more time for Edgar Granados.
Thank you.
Nick Brunner. Jesse Jones. If you'd like to hear more Stabs, please go to one of our many online outlets, the primary of which being Stab for gold.com or at Stab Show on Twitter. Go to SoundCloud if you want to see our faces. You can go to YouTube. Check that out. This edition of Stab was recorded and produced live at Luna's Cafe. One more time for Art Luna juicing it up. Our recording engineer was Dan Herrera and TBP Studios. Live voiceover work was done by December 1988 Playgirl Centerfold John the Crockpot Alston. Also, our social media was handled by Fingers. That's so weird. Wardrobes were provided by Jammin' Bread. The lodging for all of our guests were established provided by the everlasting love of Jesus Christ. Thank you, Lord. Thanks for listening, and good evening. Thank you very much for coming to Stab.